It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running for the third broadcast of the brand new year 2018 version of the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. I think that's fixed now. I certainly hope it is. And, well, doggone it, it is 42 degrees here in the studio. And we've been running the propane heater on high since about noon. And, rats. Okay, thank you. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Ace, for letting me know. Head On live stream up. Tune in is deader than Tutankhamun's Siamese cat. Yeah, oh well. These things happen. Maybe this is God. But anyway, it's freezing back here. I'm layering, and we're 2 minutes into the program. I can't feel my fingers. One of these days we're gonna have to do something about heating this joint up back here. But no, we're not. We'll just keep on doing what we're doing now. But damn, it is cold. And I don't know. At some point in the program, depending on the cardioid polar pattern of this microphone probably will keep you from hearing the wind hammering at the mansion here. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and yes, we are we're off and running now. Let me make sure things are. Yes, there we go. It's pretty. It is. It is pretty nastily cold. I'm just checking to see if HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is back up as it should be. That's always been so busy trying to keep things, you know, warm. Yeah, there it is. Okay, cool. I need to get in there and change that challenge. I'm sorry about that. But it's back up. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is back up. But regardless of whether you go to HeadOn.live or HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, well, you'll have a lot more luck accessing the stream, apparently, at HeadOn.live. And also there, let's get this out of the way early, the PayPal button. That's how we keep this thing funded. And frankly, right now, that's how we buy lots and lots of propane. We finished the program last night, and remember, this is new. We're going to try this in the new year. We're going to go forward, hoping for some fundraising free broadcast days at the end of every month. Toward that end, we need to keep up with the fundraising goal each and every day of the week, so that, you know, the last week and a half or so, maybe a week, however it works out, could be fundraising free. And I'll just sort of tally up tally up the subscribers, and that'll tell as we go and keep track of where the nightly fundraising goes, and that'll tell us whether or not we're going to be fundraising free. Speaking of our subscribers, many thanks must go out this evening to our friend Patrick in Germany, and to our buddy Paul, and to Catherine. Catherine in California, thank you each and every one of you for your help. Thank you very much, indeed. And hopefully, what that leaves us at is $335 to fundraise this evening. $335, and the 10 at 33, etc. And if we can raise that, well, we'll finish the week tomorrow with a regular fundraising goal, and that'll be awesome. But we got $335 to go this evening, and $535 to go to finish the week. And let's see. Yep. So, the PayPal buttons are all over the place. Headon.live, headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. If you'd like to become a subscriber, you can do that by clicking the Make This a Continuing Monthly Donation button for whatever amount you care to put in the screen there. If you want to you want it to come out on the first day of every month, then use the Patreon option, patreon.com/BobKincaid. And you'll be right in the thick of things. Steve telling me as well that White Rose seems to be down. Randy and PA letting me know that you're off and running, except for possibly the White Rose-sponsored iTunes stream. Well, it's not an iTunes stream. It's just the White Rose stream. How you listen to it is your business. We don't broadcast on iTunes Radio. Yep, and there we go. Happy New Year, Bob, says Marty. And now the bad news, just in case you haven't heard, MP3 stream's not working, listening on HeadOn.live. Well, that's the groovy thing. HeadOn.live is, it works. Let's just put it that way, lately. It works. Yes, I'm on air. So anyway, if you'd like to help out, that's how we keep things going around here. And, of course, there's always the United States mail. Boss Man Wayne picks up the mail. I don't pick up the mail. I never see the mail. And he does that over at our little mailbox, the address for which is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, West Virginia, WV 25801, 25801, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. All righty then. And of course, if you'll send me a note, I'll tell Boss Man Wayne to keep an eye out, and that way, with the spider-proof gloves, they get left in the truck, and all he has to do is take a piece of rebar with him in case he runs into the grand exalted, noble, majestic, gracious, Kleagle Cyclops dragon of the clan who picks up their mail there as well. What earth? Hey, it's that Bob Kincaid feller on that what they're typing TV. Okay. Jesus. So anyway, that's all of that, and hopefully, boy, it'd be nice to just boom, done, and I can shut up about it. But I got a feeling I'll be making mention of it throughout the course of the evening, and sometimes you'll have that. But it is, and I got no room to complain. I've got dear friends in coastal areas of the eastern United States. I've seen pictures of ducks making themselves very small and hunkered down against a wall in this killing cold of a hurricane that's not a hurricane. Because we can't call it a hurricane because, it's January. So it's a bomb cyclone because we wouldn't want to make anybody think that there was anything, you know, screwed up and sideways and with the climate or anything on this here little blue-green marble time machine that's hurtling in its helical way through the universe. Wouldn't want to do that. Of course not. But the times like this can make you feel, well, I don't know about you, but I walked outside just to see what it was like a few minutes before air, and just so I could talk about it, because, you know, that's what we do on the professional radio. We talk about the weather. There are entire news broadcasts that are devoted to happy talk about the weather. Gosh, Bill, it sure is cold out there. That's right, Fred. It's cold, I'm telling you. Cold. Yeah. But I just, well, among other things, I wanted to see if the highfalutin piece of Patagonia gear would actually stop the wind like it says it does. And you know what? It does. It does. I don't think this thing weighs 10 grams. And it stops the wind like a wall. Remember, if you want to support a company that actually has the nerve to stand up against the carotene Caligula, well, Patagonia.com is a good choice. And they've got a lot of stuff that will stop cold in its tracks, because it's made for people who go places where it's really cold. I saw a photograph today, as a matter of fact, of someone. we've got a stream that falls off the mountain down near Gauley Bridge, West Virginia, at the foot of Gauley Mountain, and it makes a beautiful waterfall in the spring, but in the winter it makes one hell of an ice wall, and that sucker no sooner freezes up than the real eco-adventurers show up, and there it was, a photograph of the frozen falls and a guy with crampons on his feet and ice axes in his hand scaling that wall of ice, you know, like all mountain climbing, because it's there. But for those of you who might need the reminder, meanwhile in Australia, says Robert from New South Wales, an extreme heat warning has been issued by the Bureau of Meteorology for the next few days across southeastern Australia. We're expecting temperatures between 40 degrees Celsius, that would be 104 Fahrenheit, and 45 degrees Celsius, that would be your 113 degrees Fahrenheit. Everyone's being asked to keep an eye on elderly neighbors. At least you know where all your heat has gone. You know, y'all need to turn off that exhaust fan. It's sucking all the heat from the northern hemisphere up over down under. But of course, let's do remember that because of that man who's MAGA-ing America right into the dirt, it's all just a Chinese hoax to destroy our manufacturing base. This is probably the only time, and it, you know, there were times in Northwest Alabama when I was growing up that it would get brutally bone-chilling cold. And I've seen 0 degrees in Northwest Alabama. It's hateful and wet. It's not a dry cold. And those were the days that my dad would come home from work and say, had a pretty nice day on the furnace there today. It was downright comfortable. You know, 1,000 degrees or so. On a day like this, nice. Let's see what Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana, has to say. Bob, here in Taliban, Indiana, it's colder than a conservative's heart and darker than a right-wing Christian's soul. Well, that would be your first cowbell of the evening. That's cold, I'm telling you. Cold. How cold is it? That's right, colder than a conservative's heart and darker than a right-wing Christian's soul. Well, I'll be dipped. Scott and Punky noting, not weather. Instead of torturing you with a San Diego weather report, I'll note the birth anniversary on this day, January 4th, 1880, of Emma Louise Smith, otherwise known as my late great Aunt Emma. The Aunt Emma of story, song, and legend, as mentioned on occasion by Scott and Punky. Oh, those are some great photographs. That's great. And what a coincidence. It was on this day in 1894. Uh-huh. No, 1896. It was on this day in 1896 that my grandfather was born. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? He'd be, 94. It's at 94. Yeah, this day in 1894, so he would be 124. And he, of course, is the grandfather that I never met. But, so, yeah, lots of auspices on this day. But like I said, it's days like this in the frozen wastes and in the dark heart of winter that one begins to yearn and pine for the things that come with warmth and the soul healing rays of the sun. And that's why the hardworking periodontic peripatetic scientists over at Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter wanted me to tell you about Walloping Watermelon. That's right, Walloping Watermelon from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter will it make you feel as though it was bright, sunny summer all over again as you recall the juicy delight and the sweetness of ripe watermelon, watermelon heart. The good watermelon, the kind of watermelon that's got seeds in it, not that weak-ass seedless stuff. No, but the good watermelons that are about 2.5 feet long and about as big around as a basketball, and you can almost crack them over your knee if you can pick them up. Oh, and that just sweet, delightful, heavenly, almost honey-like, succulent flavor that just says summer. Well, the hard-working periodontic peripatetic scientists over at Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter, have gotten hold of some, and they were shipped up from the Southern Hemisphere at great climate warming cost, I might add. But they got hold of some non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, free-range, cage-free, cruelty-free watermelons, and they have reduced them to a proprietary blend, stuffed them into capsules, so that you, in the dark heart of winter, can have the nutritional goodness of summertime's most delightful natural treat. That's right, Walloping Watermelon from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs. You know, I've never cared much for watermelon, but thanks to Walloping Watermelon from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, I can have a big old sunshiny slab of watermelon anytime I want it, and it'll fit right in the palm of my hand in just a couple of little capsules. And if you act now, because operators aren't standing by, well, you too can have a 3-month supply of Walloping Watermelon, and that might carry you actually through to something approaching watermelon season. Nah, not really. Okay, so a 6-month supply. Well, anyway, a 3-month supply of Walloping Watermelon in all of its proprietary wonderfulness, well, that'll set you back $106.97 plus shipping and handling of $73.15. And if you order that 3-month supply right now, well, we will happily send you a little bundle of test strips. And you'll be able to subject your Walloping Watermelon capsules to our test strips and find out what we know here at Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter. To wit, that is, that Walloping Watermelon has absolutely no nutritional value whatsoever. None. Zero. Just like all the other bullshit nutritional supplements being hustled to the credulous on all kinds of other radio programs, because after all, you can't be a professional radio program without a bullshit nutritional supplement to hustle. So, by all means, get busy, order your 3-month supply of walloping watermelon from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Accept no substitutes, use no hooks, post no bills, FOB, COD, SPITTING, SEEDS. Walloping watermelon from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. And, of course, every time I talk about how cold I am, it turns into a competition with the rest of the frozen north. The note coming in from Laurel in southwest Minnesota, who says, cheer up, Bob, we're now at perihelion, the point on Earth's orbit where we come closest to the sun. Right here and now, in January, we are roughly 3 million miles closer to our fiery friend than we are in July. It sure don't seem like it. That's all I can say. Yeah, no kidding. And wait, Laurel didn't even say anything about how brutally cold it is in Minnesota. Yeah. Okay, there's that taken care of. Oh yes, Jim wants to know, what are you wearing? Layering. This is, I'm a pretty hardy fella, and I've got a little bit of a natural insulation, but no, not that much. What are you wearing? Layering? Yes, I am layered. Long underwear, top to bottom. Some flannel-lined jeans over that, and on top of that, this magnificent Patagonia jacket, which I'll add works great. It's just, now, at this point in time, it's the feet and the hands, and I really can't find any gloves that allow me the fine finger dexterity that I need to run, to run the program and press all the buttons and do all of that stuff. Oh, okay, I understand. Yeah, some hearty upper Midwestern stoicism coming from Laurel. If it's not below zero, I ain't complaining. Well, that's what another friend of mine in the Northwoods, Rob, told me. He said, we don't think it's cold up here, and he lives on the shores of Lake Superior. We don't think it's cold up here unless it's below 20. Unless it's gotten to 20 below. Although he did suggest, he said when it gets to 20 below, he said you put a few drops of food coloring in a quart jar of water, and stir it up, and you take it outside. Not the boiling stuff, mind you. People are hurt. Do you have any idea how stupid people are? Of course you do. There are people going outside in brutally cold weather with boiling water and throwing it in the air and burning the out of themselves in the process. You don't even have to do it with boiling water, though. As Rob explained it to me, a few drops of food coloring, and you throw it up in the air, and, you don't throw up. It's too early in the program for that kind of talk. It's only 23 past the hour. But you throw the water into the air, and wonderful ice crystal things happen. I saw the damnedest photograph today that I've seen in a long time. I saw a frozen wave off the coast of Massachusetts. Or as they say down south, Massachusetts. Don't ask me why. That's the way every teacher I had from first through eighth grade, probably, maybe on into high school, pronounced Massachusetts. Massachusetts. I got no clue. Maybe it was still mad about that whole dust-up that happened between 1861 and 1865. But no, Agnes showed it to me. I said, you sure that's not Photoshop? She said, no, this one's real, Bob. And it was a wave coming toward the shore, and it just kind of went, and froze, and snow collected on it. Yes, Anatole, they are having a cold hurricane in New England right now. I've been getting dispatches from the Massachusetts coast all day long. And the photographs are stunning. Good foot, and this was a couple of hours back. We have a good foot of snow on the ground, I was told. And one photograph of the river there looked like just sort of a gray mass with some architectural span behind it, and it was a color photo that was just sort of naturally black and white. And I'm glad to see Steve from Georgia Stan in the chat room. He was pretty far under the weather last night. I hope he is feeling considerably perkier. Hey, Steve. So that takes care of all of the shilly-shallying that we do at the beginning of the program. Again, I'm happy to report that Skype is now working again, which means we can get back to the business of carrying on, some conversation, as in conversation radio. Then just a reminder for later on, the phone number, of course, area code 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. And from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype, and that'll get you into the program. Note coming in from Ron in Raleigh, subject line, how much do you want to bet? Was that fella climbing that ice wall by any chance not black? You just had to do that, didn't you? No, that dude climbing that ice wall was not black. In other words, he had no sense whatsoever. Did you see that guy in Buffalo snowboarding in just a pair of shorts? That guy, too, at which point you just look up and you're white people. Also from Ron and Raleigh, subject line, anniversary. Before your time, this is the 50th anniversary of the Ice Bowl Dallas versus Green Bay game. That's not before my time. I was four. Temperature on game day, 17 below zero. When the referee blew his whistle, his lip froze to his whistle, and when he tried to remove it, he tore out a chunk of his lip. Damn. Ugh. Yuck. That's not the Heidi Bowl, though, is it? That's not the one that NBC interrupted to show Heidi. It's a different game. This was on the frozen tundra in Green Bay. Yes. We've got a bowl. There's a college bowl game that's played in Yankee Stadium now. It's called the Pinstripe Bowl. If we're going to be that dumb, I think there should be a college football bowl game that should be played by two teams with at least 6-6 records from below the line that runs from like South Carolina, the northern border of Georgia, northern border of Alabama, all the way across the United States. No team that ever plays in anything resembling cold should be allowed to play in that bowl game, and it should be played at Lambeau Field. Wouldn't that be delightful? And it should be played on New Year's Day. It would at least be interesting to watch, because the effects, like Ron mentions there, those southern teams would be what? Okay, there's the health update from Steve from Georgia Stan, all-around great guy. Fever broke at 3 o'clock this morning. Mattress so soaked I had to change the sheets. Even the dogs bailed. Body temp dropped to 95 degrees, probably due to being packed in ice. Everything's stabilized, but I still feel like I've been run over. Not dicking around anymore, says Steve. Next time my doctor says go to the ER, I'm there. Well, probably good advice, but we're glad that you're here right now. Glad that you're here right now, Steve. So, where does that leave us? Yes. The whole day has been nothing but revelations from Fire and Fury, the Michael Wolff book, about the first year of the Trump administration. Apparently, our buddy Michael in Madison jumped right out there to get his copy. And I got a note from him. I think Amazon sent me the wrong goddamn book. And it's it appears to be F-Y-R-E, Fire, and Furry. Fire and Furry, Inside Sean Spicer's Wild Tropical Journey by Ja Rule. Oh, complete with a picture of Sean Spicer in his Easter Bunny costume. And in the background, a photo from that what was the name of that godforsaken festival on, help, please, with the picture of the cheese sandwich. Oh, God, you know, I need these laughs along the way. I do so much. Ron in Raleigh points out, hey, Bob, the wind chill factor was 48 below zero at that game. Yeah. See, a bowl game with something like that, with teams from, like, South Texas or Gulf Coast, Florida. I mean, by the way, congratulations to the University of Central Florida, the real national champions of college football. The only major college team to go through the season and have an absolutely perfect record and finished it up by humiliating the living bejesus out of Auburn, who felt like they were far too good to have to play against some little pissant team from Central Florida in the Peach Bowl. And they got their asses handed to them. Congratulations. UCF. But again, UCF playing on Lambeau Field for the national championship. By God, I'd think about flying up for that one. Oh, yeah. It is, however, I might remind you, Thorn in the Side Thursday here on the Horn. We celebrate those moments of right wingery that make you go, like you just took a thorn in the side. The naming comes originally from a suggestion by our buddy Horst in Taiwan, who, being a big fan of Joseph Heller's Catch 22, as am I, recalled Colonel Cathcart? Or was it General Peckham or General Dreidel? Constantly worrying. He had a list. Thorns in the side and feathers in the cap. Well, Thorn in the Side Thursday is named for that. Marty, that would work. A team from Hawaii, if they could manage a winning record, that would be cool. Send them to Lambeau. But a new feature premieres this evening. A little something put together by Brother Deacon Asa. And this is a beauty. We'll call it This Day in Horn History. Seemed to deserve the reverb. This Day in Horn History for January 4th, 2018. Let's spin the time machine dial and go all the way back to This Day in Horn History. For January the 4th, 2007. Bob, high on nausea medication, breaks into the program reeling from just having watched the Gerald Ford funeral. He says the most painful part of watching the funeral was having to listen to Dick Cheney deliver the eulogy. Bob suggests that through the Watergate scandal, America was exposed to the worst. Boy, will future Bob ever have a good laugh at 2007 Bob. Ha 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 ha. Oh, look at poor, simple 2007 Bob over there. Ha 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 ha. Watergate was the worst. Oh, that is a knee slapper. Yes. He then moves on to railing against Tom Hanks for making the Southern gentleman look stupid in his role as Forrest Gump. Next up, Bob tells us how Gerald Ford screwed the pooch by starting the trend of preemptive pardons. He then suggests that as of this day, January 4th, 2007, he's thinking about changing Dr. Bill's intro music, Fanfare for the Common Man, because they played it during the Gerald Ford funeral orgy, or what he calls the Ford-G. Bob then proudly proclaims that he can't demean the office of the presidency by simply pointing out Bush has ears like jug handles and eyes like a pig. Next up, Bob talks about the hanging of Saddam J. Hussein. Maybe somewhere deep inside, Bob knows there's a dictator with the middle initial J in the world's future. Having exhausted himself with the doom, gloom, and the absolute mutiny of the moment, Bob ends the filibobster and moves on to the calls. And that is...
Today in Horror History!
From January 4th, 2007. I love that. That's fun. That's going to be a real blast if Asa keeps after it. Of course, asking anybody to dig that far deep into the Horn archives is asking a lot. Ah, well, welcome to the group, Silent R. Lamar. Damn, I made it. Damn, computer went down at fucking 5 a.m., and I'm still recovering. You fill in the blank. Okay. Glad you're here. Glad to see you in the room. It's a happy bunch in the room. If you pick out a screen name and a password and jump in, you'll be met by the likes of Anatole and Earther and Hoghead and Silent R. Lamar and Sentient Being and Squeaky and Steve from Georgia Stan and VT Blom, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to become Man Cave and Sparky at one in the same time. Yes, sometimes he rubs our noses in it, that spacing guild master does. Mm-hmm. But no, we spent the day, I don't care what channel you were on or what you were reading on the interweb tubes. I think cable channels that featured nothing more than 10-second videos of cats, kittens, it probably had coverage of the Fire and Furry book. Fury. See what you, damn it, Michael. See what he did. Because this thing is apparently a treasure trove. And interestingly enough, the White House is doing a piss-poor job, what a surprise, of refuting any of it. As I pointed out last night, for instance, their response to to Steve Bannon's claim that Don Jr.'s behavior with the Russia meeting with poor Russian peasant orphan waif Natalia Veselnitskaya, who can't even spell Vladimir Putin, their response was to say that he lost his mind, but not to deny that the act was treasonous. Yeah, stuff like that. Well, it continued today. And last night there was the story, as I mentioned, of the fact that the world has caught up to us, because there was mentioned in the book of the fact that Ivanka has been making plans to be president, our first woman president, to be precise. And that, of course, is something you knew several months ago because you listened to this program. Right. Uh, Well, it continued today. And I don't know who's doing it or what kind of Kevlar suit you have to wear to do it. But somebody's telling Marcus Aurelius what's in this book. And you gotta wonder what the purpose of it is. I personally wonder if there are still insurgents of a sort inside the Trump White House who are trying to push him toward that stroke to which he seems to be so obviously near. I mean, there is some seriously weird stuff in this book. Like the story of Ivanka telling a chum how they go about doing Trump's hair every day. Now we all know it's a comb over. But the thing is, Ivanka was telling the story about how her daddy had, what was it, scalp reduction surgery, which just sounds terrifying in the first place. I mean, I never. Does scalp reduction surgery cure anything? Because I'm a weirdo. I don't like the idea of surgery. I mean, if I was, say, you know, a Cy Young award-winning left-handed pitcher, and I had to have the Tommy John surgery to get my arm back, yeah, okay, you'll do that, because it's got an economic impact for you, and it probably will alleviate some considerable amount of misery later in life. If you have to have surgery, if something needs to be excised from your body for you to go on enjoying this once in a lifetime chance to be a living thing on planet Earth, and you know you've got the coverage to do it, get it done. I mean, I live that situation every day. Try not to think about it a lot. It's like it's my own little personal Archelian battle cruiser in orbit above the planet. But they say it would be, you know, it's not, you know, a cosmetic thing. But the idea of going under the knife, because maybe it was that cup of coffee I had in law school. And ideas of informed consent and all the shit that can go wrong that got me to thinking this way. But once the anesthesia starts, anything can happen. God damn it, there's ice in my water bottle in here. Never mind. Anything can happen. And so, at some point in time, Donald J. Trump was so vain that somebody talked him into having his scalp reduced. I confess I have not looked up, because I'm sure there... You know what? I'm sure. As sure as I am that the sun's going to rise on another frozen landscape tomorrow, I'm sure that you can go to YouTube and find videos of scalp reduction surgery. But the purpose of it, I guess, is to make it possible for you to have a more hirsute scalp and have less of it be barren of hair. Because some people are so freaking vain, some men are so freaking vain, that they cannot get through life without hair. Really. So he had scalp reduction surgery. And what Ivanka went on to explain was that after the scalp reduction surgery, his hair would be, it was the classic male pattern horseshoe haircut. That's what it used to be referred to when I was, your dad's got a horseshoe haircut. Well, yes, he does, and I probably will too. But that's okay, because it comes with the Y chromosome, I guess. Well, I mean, I don't guess. It's fact. So you live with it. And so he grows his hair long, which immediately, if you live in my mind, and you wouldn't want to, but if you live in my mind, what you'll find out is that you find yourself imagining Trump before his hair has been done, and you realize he probably looks a hell of a lot like Riff Raff from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Because he's got to have enough to comb up and over. And so Ivanka described this process, and I know this seems terribly venal and probably downright simple and meaningless in the grand scheme of things, but work with me here. Your Honor, I will provide I will show the relevance of it if you'll just give me a little bit of leeway. So there's this thing that somebody does every morning where his long hair is teased up over his head and then varnished into place with some sort of god-awful industrial sticky stuff that's probably made from the bones of clubbed baby seals. Because it's Trump. And so there's this account of all of this, of Ivanka giving away this secret, because it's a secret, and then, and this is what makes it a story, laughing about. Laughing about it. Now you couple this with the bedroom story, and it gets even weirder. So the White House is a pretty big building. And the president doesn't live in all of it. Most people know that. The people in this little community, family community congregation certainly do. The first family lives in what is called the residence. And it's upstairs and off to one side or whatever. Okay, that's fair enough. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, no, damn it, Bob, not scalp reduction surgery. He had brain reduction surgery. But anyway, in the residence, Trump insisted on, and again, they're not denying this. They're just angry that people know it. Because this is one of those little details that might make the Trumpanzees think he's a little bit weird. Okay, a lot weird. He insisted on converting a portion of the residence into his personal bedroom, and it had been part of, like, the living room area. Melanoma gets her own bedroom, and Geezer Disgustus gets another bedroom, and at first he insisted that it was to have a lock on it that only he could operate. This did not sit well with the Secret Service, who said, sir, we're the Secret Service. We're in charge of making sure you don't get all dead and stuff. So we'll be needing access to it. And that pissed him off. This guy is Captain Queeg was never this weird. I mean, you have to go to fiction to find find examples of this kind of bizarre behavior. In real life, the American goddess of poetry, Emily Dickinson, standing behind a lace curtain and referring to herself as the Bride of Christ, and that's how she received visitors to her Massachusetts home. She stood behind a curtain while everybody else was in the parlor. Wasn't this weird? In case you didn't realize it, we have a person who is, sure enough, no kidding, unfreaking hinged in the White House. And it only gets weirder. The only person allowed in his private space is who? Ivanka. Not his traditional upstanding Bible-believing Christian family values wife, Melanoma, his daughter, Ivanka, for whom he lusted when she was going through puberty. How's that for an ick factor? He screams at the help. One of the maids, housekeeping staff, picked up one of his dirty shirts off the floor in his weird little Howard Hughes bedroom. Or weird big Howard Hughes bedroom. And he screamed at her and told her that if it's on the floor, if there is a shirt on the floor, it's on the floor because I want the shirt on the floor. Don't pick anything up. Don't touch anything in here. Steve in New York asking, not even little Boron? Not even little Boron. He's obsessed with his toothbrush because he's afraid people are going to try to poison him. For a guy, and this is, you know, all of this is within the jurisdictional realm of the goddess of irony. The irony in this case being that this guy couldn't name the first emperor of Rome. If you spotted him, the Augustus and the Caesar, or the Caesar and the Augustus, and then told him it rhymed with Geezer Disgustus, and yet he is behaving with all the paranoia and all the mania of the absolute worst of that lot. He's afraid the deep state is going to poison him with his toothbrush. I don't know, maybe because of the whole poisonous powder in the skin diving suit with Fidel Castro and whatever. No, I don't. No, he doesn't know that either. But Ivanka's the one who comes in and, I guess, does his hair. And now he's going to find out that she's out there betraying him each and every day, and that she laughs about him behind his back. And that's going to make him even more furious. It's okay if people get mad at him. People have been getting mad at him for years. But it's the being laughed at part that makes him crazy. And he's going to go there. Yeah, is Steve pointing out the weird just got creepy and Howard Hughes-ish? Oh, if they said that the room was lined with bottles of urine because he was afraid to pee in a toilet, would you bat an eyelash at that? No, you'd go, oh, okay, yeah, I'd buy that. Scott and Punky pointing out, how weird is he? The Howard Hughes comparison is apt. Constant repetition of words or phrases, isolation, secrecy, paranoia. It wouldn't surprise me if he soon starts keeping his urine in little bottles all over the place. Do you see how the minds work here in this little family community congregation? It's like we're connected by a vast and weird and occasionally somewhat humorous web of mental telepathy. Meanwhile, note coming in, and again, here's another example of that. I shared the line from Brother Deacon Asa with you. Well, at roughly the same time, Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana is writing in. I'm pretty sure he also had brain reduction surgery. Those are called lobotomies. And meanwhile, working the same side of the street, Scott and Punky note, scalp reduction surgery, when Trump had the procedure, the intent was to transplant the tissue from the big head onto the little head. And in far away and not frozen San Francisco, Matt writes under the subject line, why, oh, why? For someone who's had his scalp reduced, he certainly had no impact on that second and third chin. Of course, if he'd had that done, he couldn't do the Mussolini chin push-out. Boy, that man knows how to waste money. Yeah, and that's the truth. I mean, we can always open up, what is it, Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament, and, you know, vanity, saith the preacher, all is vanity. That's but if there was chaos before, this is going to cause an exponential increase in it. Now that's obscure. Ron and Raleigh, subject line, I wonder, is his favorite movie Ice Station Zebra? That's one you're going to have to work through. All right, then. That's just a starting place, because there's a lot more. I mean, my God, we've got what? Yes, we've still got the lawyers to deal with, and we've got a new phrase or a new reference to add into the vocabulary. Trump person. Trump person. Where does that come from? Well, it comes from the fact that Geezer Disgustus insisted that his lawyer file a suit against or, well, not a suit, but send a cease and desist letter in regard to this book. The lawyer, Charles J. Harder. Oh, God, the guy. She's working hard. I mean, she's jumping on the bellows. She's stoking the fires so hot. Trump lawyer Charles J. Harder of the firm Harder, Morrell, and Abrams, LLP, issued a statement. They said, "This law firm represents President Donald J. Trump and Donald J. Trump for President, Inc. On behalf of our clients, legal notice was issued today to Stephen K. Bannon that his actions of communicating with author Michael Wolff regarding an upcoming book give rise to numerous legal claims, including defamation by libel and slander, and breach of his written confidentiality and non-disparagement agreement with our client's legal action is imminent." Why did I say the goddess of irony is working overtime on this one? Well, it's pretty easy. Charles Harder is the, you know, I mean, Donald Trump likes to threaten to sue people who say things about him that he doesn't like. We all know that. "Yeah, I'll sue you. I'll definitely sue you. I'll sue you into a million years ago." Mm-hmm. And then doesn't. Well, in this case, the object of his ire is especially galling to him because he's like a heartbroken heartbroken suitor. This is a breakup between him and Steve Bannon. "Oh, I never knew the guy. I never heard of him. Steve who? No, he wasn't. He was barely part of my campaign. Had nothing to do with me becoming president." When in fact, you know, he had everything to do with him becoming president. If Steve Bannon doesn't come on board and leverage the Nazis who made up the margin between him and in the Electoral College between him and the woman who won the popular vote, he ain't president. It's that simple. Goes back to when he and Milo, Bannon and Milo, were talking on that radio program from that organization that rhymes with light and fart. And they said, you know, fully half or more of the Republican base is alt-right, their term, not mine. We just use the word Nazi. And it's true. It is true, 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 true. And so without Steve Bannon, there's no President Trump. And there's Steve Bannon saying things that are decidedly not nice. About Donald Trump's family? And about Donald Trump himself. And here's the kicker for all of that. Michael Wolff has tapes, or not tapes, there's no tape. Michael Wolff has audio recordings of all of it. All the stuff that's in that book comes from transcripts. And so it's verifiable. You can put the words right into the mouths of the people who said them. And this, too, is driving them bananas. But why do I reference the goddess of irony? I'll tell you why. He wanted a lawyer to threaten Steve Bannon and to threaten Michael Wolff and the publisher, Henry Holt & Company. Well, they certainly threatened him, because instead of the book being released to the public next week, it's going to be released tomorrow. And thanks to the White House, Michael Wolff is going to be able to make enough money to retire very comfortably just about anywhere he wants, under just about any circumstances. The White House, the Trump administration, has done more for this book than Band in Boston used to do for others. But still, what's ironic about that? Here's the irony. How many women are there who say that Trump sexually harassed or sexually assaulted them? It's up past a day. It's up past a baker's dozen, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And of course, his response to all of them, even though there are photographs of him sitting with them, with his arm around them, smiling at them, yada 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 yada, his response to all of them is, "I never knew him. I never knew him. I never heard of him. I never was in the same room with him, even when they were getting dressed at one of the pageants I own, and I saw their insufficiently sized breastuses, because they've definitely got insufficiently sized breastuses. Definitely a six." In other words, the same response that he gives in regard to Steve Bannon, never heard of him. Well, when he needed somebody to apply lawyer heat to send a nasty gram on his behalf, he got hold of Charles Harder, former lawyer to, wait for it, it's on the way. Wait for it. Oh, this one looks really fat heading toward the mound. Oh, my God. It's slow, and it's not breaking, and it's hanging right over the middle of the plate. My God, this thing may leave the stadium. This thing may put out a windshield in the parking lot. He hired Harvey Weinstein's lawyer. That's right. Charles Harder, former lawyer to Harvey fucking Weinstein. That's the kind of scumbag that Donald Trump hires when he's got problems in which he needs to intimidate and harass someone into giving up their First Amendment rights. Because there's some First Amendment stuff in here, too. Because this is a book about the President of the United States. And therefore, any attempt by the President of the United States to suppress the speech of Michael Wolff is an attempt to suppress political speech, which is the most highly protected form of speech guarded and protected by the First Amendment to the Constitution. This is another thing they didn't think about. Now you can go to you can find the letter written by Charles Harder, former lawyer to Harvey Weinstein. He's also the former lawyer to Hulk Hogan. Look, I defend the necessity of lawyers to do unsavory things on behalf of their clients. Because you've got to have that if you want some sort of legal justice system that isn't just, trial by combat, or if he weighs the same as a duck, he's made of wood and therefore a witch, and he has got a wart. Right. But there's scummy and then there's scummy. Way, 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 way back when, Hulk Hogan gave a video of himself having illicit sex with the wife of a shock jock called Bubba the Love Sponge to Bubba. And Bubba then put it into, I think I've got the timeline right here. Bubba then put it into the hands of a website called Gawker, who published the video, which was not real good for Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan then sued Bubba the Love Sponge for publishing the video that he, Hulk Hogan, gave to Bubba. This, in turn, was financed by a scumbag from out west, from Silicon Valley, who wanted to see Gawker go down because Gawker had written things about him that, while true, he did not like. He hired Charles Harder of Harder Merrill Abrams or what the fuck ever. So this is, you know, this is the kind of only the best people that Donald Trump surrounds himself. And Harder's letter is all obsessed with non-disclosure agreements and non-disparagement agreements, and there's this paragraph about libel and slander per se. All the while ignoring the fact that, while we're at it, yes, we are definitely trying to suppress your civil fucking rights, Mr. Wolf. Not that this is the Michael Wolf Appreciation Program. But that's where, that's where this bunch are. They don't give a damn about constitutional rights. The only thing that matters in the United States of America on the 4th day of January 2018 is whether or not the guy occupying the Oval Office has had his fifis hurt or been insulted or disparaged. I mean, Jesus, you know, and melanoma sleeps in a separate bedroom? Where's little Boron sleep? Never mind. I'm guessing she's over there by choice. But, I mean, I know Lucy and Ricky slept in twin beds because, you know, you couldn't show a married couple sleeping in the same bed on network television back in the 1950s. But, Jesus, he sleeps behind a door that she can't get through? What's he afraid of? He's afraid his toothbrush is going to be poisoned? By whom? Yeah, note coming in from Jeff in Hellhole, Indiana, from the law firm Dickham, Harder & Howe. Yeah, okay. Meanwhile, working the same corner, Scott and Punky of the firm Harder, Deeper, and Faster. Oh, and about that cease and desist letter, instead of being published on January 9th, the date's been moved up to January 5th. Yes. Scott continues, this attitudinal turnabout of Steve Bannon is something I speculated on months ago, shortly after his fall from grace in the Trump administration. I noted then that there would come a day when the long ago words of Lyndon B. Johnson would become relevant in terms of Bannon. As president, Johnson suddenly decided to extend J. Edgar Hoover's tenure as FBI director to a lifetime appointment. When asked why he'd done it, LBJ explained, I'd rather have him inside the tent pissing out than outside the tent pissing in. Betcha Trump is rethinking Bannon's departure. But then again, Bannon's departure was not orchestrated by Trump. Trump would have been happy to have had him there to this day. Trump is probably madder than an old wet hen at John Kelly. Because that's how Bannon got gone. Meanwhile, Steve in New York says, I completely disagree that half of the Trump more GOP base is alt-right. It's more like 80% to 90%, I would posit, and I would agree. And as we head out to the break, and it being Thursday, and the new year being well upon us and well underway, Brad and Desi are back with the Green News Report, so that's cool. Steve says, would you put on your purple tattered robe with the stars and moons appliqued upon it? And will thee kiss me in the dark, baby, written in glow-in-the-dark paint across the front? And grab the magic eight ball with the cracked screen that says always says answer hazy, ask again later. And do some prognosticating. Do you think that this just might be what makes the cabinet et al. Start the 25th Amendment process? Start it? There's this is where you have to get all Yoda if you're wearing robes and say, there is no start the 25th Amendment process. There is only 25th Amendment process or not 25th Amendment process. There is no start. And if Roger Stone is to be believed, and this is the kind of thing that you believe Roger Stone on, the conversations are already taking place. This may, however, push things further in that direction. But here's the problem, and we can talk about it in the conversation part of the program if you wish. Here's the problem. At some point, you're going to have to get Betsy DeVos on board. At some point, you're going to have to get Ben Carson on board. At some point in time, you're going to have to get Shrinky Zinky on board. There's a total of like 18 cabinet level posts, and you got to get 9 of them, plus the vice president. Now, Betsy DeVos is a religious maniac like Steve Pencilneck or Mike Pencilneck Geek is. So maybe that's how you sell her, but he's going to have to be the one to convince her. And I guess he would be the one who would convince Ben the pyramids were grain silos, Carson, too. But that's, you know, you still got to have 9 cabinet members. And that, at this point, maybe Rexon Tillerson, Mattis, that's Secretary of State, that's Secretary of Defense, Mnuchin. How loyal is Mnuchin? That's anybody's guess, but the thing is, Christianity's not going to be the sell for Steve Mnuchin. It's either going to be, I make money here. The question is going to be, with whom do I make more money? Because the other part of some of these revelations, and again, for me, watching these revelations roll out all day long has been like watching people who all of a sudden started listening to the horn, started listening to this program's archives from 6, 7, 8, 9 months ago. Because this is all stuff that has been said here, that he is in steep mental decline, that he's not okay. Michael Wolff had a follow-up article today pointing out that at a pre-New Year's meet and greet down at that overpriced dump in Florida of his, that there were a line of well-wishers he had known for ages. And that he couldn't recognize any of them. He couldn't recognize any of them. And yet he's still turned loose with some sort of machine that will tweet for him with bizarre grammar and weird punctuation and absolutely otherworldly capitalization. And he's trying to tweet our way into a nuclear holocaust. If that's not sobering, sobering's not a thing. So let's take a break. A note coming in from Matt in San Francisco. While we're at it on law firm names, harder, suck 'em, and fast. Oh, yeah, you guys are pro. We'll take the break now. I'll note that we entered the program with $335 to raise. We still have $335 to raise. And I'm sorry about that, and I'm sorry about the fundraising, but it's the only way this program stays on the air. So if anybody wants to start hitting the PayPal button, sooner would be better, better than later. It really would be. And at 20 minutes past the hour, we will take a break. This is listener-supported conversation radio. No commercials, y'all. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob. Thanks for the bumper, Ron.
Heart is sinking. It's Thursday, January 4, 2018.
The deep freeze even canceled many New Year's Eve celebrations from Boston to St. Louis and even as far south as Fort Worth, Texas.
Record cold and bomb cyclone slams the eastern U.S.
Clearly, November and December have been disappointing.
Drought grips California again. What happens in the melting Arctic doesn't stay in the melting Arctic. Plus, under cover of the holidays, Trump administration guts even more environment and safety regulations.
All of that New Year gutting and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Because Donald Trump's cold right now, that's evidence that the Earth is not getting warmer. Just like because Donald Trump is president right now, that's evidence we've never had a competent president.
First green Trump slam of the year. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I usually don't know what's going on with the climate. Now I really don't know what's going on with the climate. A bomb cyclone?
Yeah, it's really getting wacky out there. We'll have more on that one in a moment. First, Tallahassee, Florida got extremely rare snowfall on Wednesday. Just one example of the extreme cold weather gripping the eastern half of the continental United States, linked to at least 17 deaths as we go to air. And now one of the most intense winter cyclones ever recorded is what meteorologists are calling a bomb cyclone because of its rapid intensification. It's slamming the eastern seaboard from Georgia to Maine, bringing the potential for dangerous storm surge, high winds, and power outages. It's the equivalent of a Category 2 winter hurricane, fueled by heat energy from near record warm Atlantic Ocean temperatures. Remember, warming oceans, brought to you by global warming.
Well, of course, Donald Trump says it's cold, so that means there is no global warming, and he probably thinks they just made up the word bomb cyclone.
Yep, that record cold usually means an outbreak of phenomenal dumb comments and false claims that extreme cold events somehow refute all of climate science. But climate scientists have predicted for decades that global warming will bring more frequent extreme weather events. And many of these same regions, remember, just saw record-breaking heat waves just 2 months ago. And to put it all into perspective, the whole rest of the planet, everything that is not the U.S. East Coast or Midwest, is actually warmer than usual right now. And while it may seem counterintuitive, scientists believe that these bitter cold events are connected to the warming of the Arctic, which is weakening the jet stream, sending frigid polar winds south to the lower U.S., like an open refrigerator door. Because what happens in the Arctic does not stay in the Arctic.
Oh, well, lucky us.
The extremes of 2018 are off to a strong start elsewhere. To escape the cold, you could head to Anchorage, Alaska, where it is actually warmer than the eastern U.S., and the state just had one of its warmest Decembers ever recorded.
Yeah, I was looking at where my family lives in St. Louis, Missouri. It was like -6 a day or two ago, and then compared it to Anchorage, Alaska, it was like 25 degrees warmer.
Meanwhile, California is grappling with extreme dryness.
We're obviously hopeful that there'll be more snow the next time we come out here in the February, March, and April snowmelt surveys.
The first official snowpack assessment of 2018 in California's Sierra Nevada mountain range on Wednesday measured just over 1 inch of snow. That's less than 3% of the average for this time of year.
Less than 3%?
Yeah, it's even worse. The entire U.S. Southwest has received only about 1% of its average rainfall since October.
Oh, boy.
Meanwhile, over the holidays, the Trump Interior Department rescinded Obama-era rules on fracking operations on the public's lands at the request of the oil and gas industry. Those rules would have reduced methane leaks, required the disclosure of fracking chemicals, and tightened standards for disposal of toxic wastewater. Environmental groups say they will challenge that repeal in court. The Trump administration also weakened safety rules on offshore drilling that were put in place to prevent a repeat of the disastrous 2010 BP oil spill, the worst in U.S. history. At the request of the oil industry, the Trump Interior Department weakened several safety regulations, including well control rules that were intended to prevent the type of blowout that killed 11 men and released more than 200 million gallons of crude oil into the Gulf of Mexico. And not only that, the Trump administration also halted a study in progress by the National Academies of Sciences intended to improve safety conditions for workers in offshore drilling operations. Finally, amid the Trump administration's rollback of safety regulations in the coal industry, fatalities in the coal mining industry, after hitting a record low in 2016, nearly doubled in 2017 to the highest point in 3 years.
Well, Donald Trump tried to take credit for the lack of commercial airplane disasters in 2017. Does he also get credit for the doubling of coal miner deaths in the same year? For much more on all of these stories and the ones we didn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
You're as cold as ice. You're willing to sacrifice our love.
Now, for some reason or another, I just want to fire up the media player and play that song. But no. And that's why that wasn't the bumper, because, you get the idea. Hi. We are halfway through the program on this fourth day of January 2018. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. And let's go straight to the now working, finally working phones, because Rich in far frozen New Jersey is on the line. Hey, Rich.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
All right. Listen, Bob, before we get any discussion of the brainless in chief, I'd like to get your physical mail, your snail mail address, so I can send you something.
It is 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, stands for personal mailbox, 318 Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, WV 25801.
Man, all right. Would you repeat that, the zip code? Because you went out for a second.
25801.
25801. Great, Bob. Thanks.
No worries.
It's good to talk to you. It's been a while.
I always enjoy hearing from you, Rich.
I appreciate it. I always enjoy listening to you, Bob. Once again, to quote the famous prophet of rock and roll, Jerry Garcia, what a long, strange trip it's been. And that's only 1 year.
Yeah, and it just keeps getting stranger.
And it just keeps getting stranger. You got it. First, I want to do a correction. One of your congregation there talked about you have brain reduction. First, you have to have a brain to have it reduced.
I was waiting on that. Wait, that's cowbell worthy. All right.
Thank you, Bob. So, I had trouble getting on Skype there, but finally I did. I couldn't find you on my Roku app, on my Roku TV for TuneIn Radio. Have you been removed from TuneIn Radio?
No, it's just that when White Rose Society's stream server doesn't work, TuneIn doesn't work.
Oh, I got it. Okay.
So let's, and this is for everybody, not just you.
Right.
If that's how you listen, and it's not on there, run. Do not walk. Run to headon.live, headon.live, because the HTML5 player that is embedded there will play for just about anybody.
That's great. Thank you, Bob.
It'll play on a mobile device. It'll play on a desktop, on a laptop. It'll play in the rain, on a train. It'll play without a brain.
What about Slacker? I couldn't get you on Slacker either.
That's probably tied to the White Rose Society, too.
Oh, okay. All right. That makes sense. Anyway, all right. It's good to talk to you on Skype anyway. I had trouble getting on Skype for a little while, but even after you said it was up and running, I had to mess around a little bit, but finally I got to you. I'm glad because I really wanted to talk to you tonight about this because I have some good news and some bad news for you, Bob. I'll give you the good news first, okay?
Well, okay.
All right. Caesar Discustis, brainless in chief, Tyler in chief, is a one-term president. Now you want the bad news?
Yeah.
He's a one-term president.
That's two.
So, because you know what's going to happen. I mean, the Democrats get control of Congress next year. He might get, you know, people don't realize this is a two-step process. A lot of people, and a lot of your people on the talk call you, I believe, don't understand that it's a two-step process to actually get rid of him. We might get him impeached in the House, but he'll never get convicted in the Senate. So, they won't be able to get 67 votes to convict him in the Senate. So that's...
I'm not sold on that, Rich.
It
depends on how... The question is, if he has no base of support, if all
right.
he's got is that hardcore cancerous little knot of dead enders and bad actors, otherwise known as the Nazis and the Klansmen and their various and sundry sympathizers, who are the 32% who will support him no matter what, there's no political cost to walking away from him. The only cost is the cost involved with whether or not they can get their agenda through. And here's the rub on that. They can get that through with Mike Pence probably. I mean, if I were a Republican and I were inclined to have this conversation, I'd say, look, Mike Pence was in the Congress. Mike Pence knows how Congress works. If there's stuff we really want to get done, you know, our evil mission, it'll be easier to get it done than it will be with him. You know, if we want to take away people's health care, it'll be easier to do with Mike Pence telling them how Jesus hates health care than it will be to have this orange monstrosity out there screwing up every step of the way. So if you can, and you know, we've got the cart way out in front of the horse, Rich, because we're assuming there's going to be some sort of tidal sweep in the midterms, and that is anything but a foregone conclusion.
I agree with that, but my contention is they're not going to be able to muster 34 Republican votes in the Senate to convict him.
Well, hold on. What do you mean 34?
They need 67. My math is off a little bit. They would have to get what 14? How many did that get?
I mean, let's say they get a majority of one. That means they got to have 16 Republicans.
All right, now 16. You really think it's feasible that we'll get to 16 Republicans that will lose?
Well, if it was me, I'd want to have a couple of extra just because you can't necessarily count on the likes of Joe Manchin and Heidi Heitkamp and that bunch.
Right, right. Yeah, you're right. But you think that's doable? Actually, I mean. I don't see any Republicans that would be willing to vote to convict him. I mean, the tribalism is intense, isn't it?
But again, Rich, that's entirely predicated on the question of whether or not he has any value to them. This isn't a criminal trial. Remember, this is a political process, and all the calculations are political.
Right. Okay. But conviction in the Senate is a criminal offense.
No.
It's not.
No.
Oh.
The entire process of impeachment, as is made clear in the Federalist Papers, is a political process.
Okay.
So when they say high crimes and misdemeanors, that's a term of art that meant something to them that it doesn't necessarily mean the same to us. Let's go back to the Beat era, okay, of black turtlenecks and berets and bongos and coffee, and let's put George Washington in one of those Greenwich Village coffee houses where he hears somebody say, "Cool, daddy-o." Okay, cool daddy-o means something to that Greenwich Village bunch that it doesn't mean to George Washington. It's going to mean that they think he's someone's father and that it's cold outside.
Okay.
Okay, well, right. High crimes and misdemeanors is like that.
Okay, I get it.
People see high crimes and misdemeanors in the Constitution, and they tend to think that it means that he at least has to be charged with jaywalking.
Okay. All right. Okay, so I understand what you're saying. That makes sense. But would he be liable if he were convicted by the Senate for criminal behavior after that? in federal court?
Once he is federal court, state court, doesn't matter. Once he is no longer president of the United States, he is chargeable as any other citizen would be.
So would any of the crimes he might get convicted of politically by the Senate, would he be liable for either state or federal court to be held accountable for his actions?
Assuming that the first thing Mike Pence didn't do was jump in and pardon him.
But does a pardon at that level imply guilt?
That matters not. I mean, Nixon was not pardoned. Nixon was pardoned and accepted the pardon and never admitted any criminal liability. Here's where it gets weird. He's only pardoned for federal offenses.
Right.
Okay. So individual governors right. would have to pardon him for state offenses. And when you consider the money laundering issues that probably swirl around everything he's ever touched, he's eminently chargeable by the state of New York, for instance.
Right. Yeah, but Pre-Pararo's gone now. Would they have a prosecutor that might bring those charges against him?
Pre-Pararo was a U.S. attorney. And so those would be federal charges. And if he's pardoned, that doesn't count.
Oh, we know the state. And we know the state attorney general would like to get him to trial. I know that. Because he's the one, the state attorney general, I can't remember his name now, the one that brought...
Schneiderman in New York.
Yeah, Schneiderman. He got the settlement for Trump University against Trump.
Right.
No criminal penalty.
And he's still investigating Trump to this day.
Right. Well, I hope it gets to the New York courts, because I think they'd have... If we get rid of him, maybe, because they would have a field day with him in New York. I'll tell you that right now. I live in New Jersey, and knowing the pulse of New York right now, just like here, because we're going to get those salt taxes that odious tax bill didn't exempt. People in New York are fired up about that, and so do a lot of people in New Jersey. I'm sure California, Connecticut as well.
Well, you know, as soon as it gets warm enough, they need to march their happy asses down to Washington, D.C., surround the Capitol, and tell them nobody comes in and nobody goes out until they fix that goddamn bill.
Well, that may happen. You never know. I mean, there's a lot of activism in the blue states in the Northeast. That's for sure. Yeah.
Well, I gotta ask you. I mean, you're in New Jersey. How far inland are you, Rich?
Well, let me tell you what we got hit with. We got hit with 60 mile an hour swirling winds. And ice pebbles pelting in that wind, making it very unpleasant. We got maybe 2 inches on the ground, but the place is a mess. It is a mess out there.
Well, and in those kind of winds, if the power goes out, it's not like the power crews can do much in storm force winds. It's just like any hurricane. You got to let it blow through before you can get out and start getting things hooked back up.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, in the area I'm at, there doesn't seem to be any effect of power outages. So, and I haven't heard of there being any, so maybe we got spared, or maybe we're just well prepared. I mean, we are pretty well prepared for the disasters in this area, since we're also, I am not that far inland from the coast. I mean, you know where Elizabeth is, right? That's a port city.
Yeah, right.
And I'm only 13 miles from, not even about 11 miles from Elizabeth. So we got, you know, the winds have swirled all their way up the coast. The storms, it hit us pretty good. It actually hit harder than I think they first predicted. But now it's on its way up to Boston, so they're going to have fun up there.
Oh, no, it's there. It's there.
It's already there?
Yeah, I was getting notes earlier today from a buddy of mine who's up there north of Boston.
And what, they got like a foot of snow?
Foot of snow, visibility next to nothing.
Right.
The power had held up until that point, and that was the big deal. But the temperatures were falling like a paralyzed falcon.
Yeah, we're probably like about 9 degrees here right now.
I checked right before airtime. Let me see what it is outside right now. It's a toasty 12 here.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I mean, it gets that way. But the thing is, it's like what Brad and Desi were saying in the Green News Report. Climate change modeling indicates that we're going to get more and weirder extremes of temperature because, as Robert in Australia noted at the beginning of the program, they're under, they're in New South Wales in the greater Sydney area. They're under a heat warning between 104 and 113 degrees Fahrenheit. And, you know, it's a week and a half, you know, 2 weeks into summer.
You know, Bob, I'd rather be having to live in extreme cold rather than extreme heat to that level because...
Because you can...
Anymore, but
yeah, you can... You can yeah, you can... It is easier to try to remain warm, I guess, in some ways than it is to try to get cool.
Yeah, exactly. Especially at that extreme. I mean, 113. I mean, the power grid must be either close to failure or getting ready to fail in a lot of parts of Australia right now.
I imagine it. Well, when you consider the population density of the Greater Sydney area,
right,
it's got to be an extreme strain on that grid.
Yeah, I would imagine because I know that if it was like that here, where I'm living, we're on an old grid that was, I think it was built in the 60s. Okay?
Yeah. Wait. You said an old grid that was built in the 60s.
Yeah.
Give me a minute.
what's your grid go back to?
The 50s, the 40s, the 30s.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You got me there, Bob. I got a cow belly over here, but I don't have one.
I'll do it for you. There
you go.
Okay, yeah.
There you go. All right. So you're on the edge of 17 above boiling there.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
And see, everything is and here it's a lot more rural than there, so everything is strung on all the power lines are strung on toothpicks through the woods.
My goodness. What is your primary power source in the homestead there?
Well, our electricity comes from Appalachian Power.
I mean, I'm talking in terms of your heating.
For heat right now, we're using a combination of electricity, propane, and kerosene.
Yikes! That could get expensive.
Yeah. Well, I added it up. It's running about $140 a week.
Wow. I'm lucky I live in a rent-controlled apartment where I don't got to worry about paying the heating bill.
And if we were using I got away from using electricity largely because, it taxes the house's system too much. And also, if I was running electricity only to even try to keep this house comfortable, it'd be more like $300 a week instead.
Yeah,
that's that clean, cheap, coal-fired electricity.
Amen to that, brother. Yep. Tiberius Discusses loves talking about that.
Oh, yeah. And meanwhile, he was going to bring back the coal industry, and as Brad and Desi pointed out, he's killing more coal miners died last year than any year in recent memory.
Bob, it's sad. That's the only word I can use to describe it.
Well, the latest one was a bulldozer operator on a mountaintop removal operation here in my county, who drove his bulldozer over the edge of the mountain.
Oh my God.
That's pathetic.
So what do you think of that press conference today? Was that weirdness plus or what?
Okay, so that brings us to what I consider to be our obligatory Star Trek reference of the evening, Rich.
Okay.
When I saw that business of him appearing on a video screen from a room that was literally separated from the press room by a freaking wall, then all of a sudden, you remember the episode where they go back and a Starfleet officer has meddled in a culture to create a Nazi system.
Yes, that was a good one.
And how they kind of had to prop him up because he was a blithering idiot, and so he only showed up on TV, sort of drugged out of his mind. Well,
like Big Brother.
Yeah, well, sooner or later, every Star Trek episode is going to have a modern parallel in our country right now.
I agree. That's beautiful. That's a beautiful comparison.
Well, we have to have at least one Star Trek reference per evening.
Yes, yes, that's a that, and that is a good one too, because that is pretty much what we saw today on that press conference.
And it, I mean, it, but they're all all exercises in the surreal.
That's well.
You know,
yeah.
Look, if you sit down, just because of the personalities involved, Rich, if you sit down and have coffee with Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags, it's going to be a surreal experience because she is surreal.
Yes, she is. She's like a Stepford Wife.
You know, I can't go there because you know the Stepford Wives.
Well, he's good looking.
Well, they were pleasant in appearance.
Yes.
And they were not entirely loathsome in their behavior.
Yeah. Hasselbeck Sandbag looks like Wednesday growing up from the Addams Family.
I've come up with no appropriate reference for her appearance, and I try to stay away from that.
I know.
But the fact of the matter is, she is a professional liar who is the daughter of a professional liar, and that entire family is deeply morally compromised.
You cut out there for a second, but I got the gist of it.
Yeah, she's just a liar who's the daughter of a liar. And as a consequence, you know, she's gonna lie.
Yeah, and lately she's gotten to throwing around these epithets, you know, like constantly ridiculous and disgusting and all of that stuff now. You know, it's like it's not even like she's doing a press conference anymore. It's like she's doing a cheerleading section. You know,
it's become a game, okay?
Yeah.
You're old enough. Do you remember? I remember in college when we'd play Hi Bob. You remember the first Bob Newhart show?
Oh yeah, sure.
And you'd sit down, you'd have some beers and stuff, and every time somebody said hi, or you know, if you were really hardcore, you played it with liquor.
I missed that game. I'm sorry, I missed that game.
And every time somebody said Hi Bob, you had to drink a shot.
Everybody had to drink a shot, or just the guy who said hi, Bob?
Everybody watched the show together, and every time somebody said hi, Bob, you had to drink.
Oh, okay.
Because that show was just every 3 minutes, hi, Bob.
Yeah.
And if somebody said Bob Hartley, you had to chug. And you could not get through an episode of the Bob Newhart show sober. Well, it's Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags is kind of like playing Hi Bob. If you, for instance, if you sat down with a bottle of, say, oh, I don't know, 110 proof absinthe.
Yum.
You'd be out of your freaking mind if you took a shot every time, for instance, she blamed Obama for something.
And you wouldn't even get to the bottom of the bottle before.
You wouldn't get to the end of the press conference.
That's what I'm talking about, yeah. You wouldn't get to the end of the press
conference. Or if you had to chug every time she told a lie, by the end of the press conference, you'd be over in a 12-step meeting.
Yeah. Probably halfway through the press conference, you'd be that blasted. I mean, every 3 minutes. What does she normally do, like 35 minutes? What's the average? Like that's a good length for her press conference before she cuts it off and runs away about 35, 40 minutes.
And that's what she does, yeah.
Yeah, and 12 shots in a half an hour would definitely put you on the floor. Or 12 beers in a half an hour would definitely put you on the floor. No question about it.
But today was just weird. and of course, with the video of him, I think there'd be something wrong with you if you didn't also immediately make reference or find yourself thinking of the projection of Oz the Great and Terrible's head above fires.
That's right.
And then off there behind the curtain with the levers and the dials.
The good news and the bad news, depending on which side of the fence you're on, is that apparently Michael Wolff's going to be releasing the tapes tomorrow. Is that what I heard? Did you hear that?
Well, they're going to release the book tomorrow. I don't know what he's going to do. I'd be surprised if the tapes come out. simply because those are going to be extremely fun. If Charles Harder decides to follow up and actually sue.
Yeah, but what, you know, they don't have a leg to stand on. I mean, he's a public figure. You can't claim libel against a public figure. It's very hard to prove.
Well, under New York Times versus Sullivan and its predecessors, that was reinforced by Falwell v. Hustler. Where that's concerned. What I find more interesting is the question of whether or not you can enforce a non-disclosure, non-disparagement contract between a corporate entity and an individual in a situation in which the person being allegedly disparaged is the president of the United States, who is by definition a public figure. Now,
yeah, but I think correct me if I'm wrong, if you heard it too, last night on Lawrence O'Donnell's show, we had lawyers on that said that anything that was released by a government employee up to and including the president of the United States under that context would be considered government product. And it would not stand up to individual libel of any kind or disparaging.
I saw that too, and I would tend to agree. But my question, you know, let's work in a separate field, Rich.
Okay.
You're a CIA agent.
Okay.
And you've retired, and you want to write a novel, it's not even a tell-all. It's not even nonfiction. You want to write a novel,
right?
And you want to use some of the stuff that you learned as a spook in your novel.
Right.
And the reason I mention this is because in a British context, that's exactly what John le Carré did when he wrote The Spy Who Came in from the Cold, which completely...
Right.
So anyway...
Thinly veiled
fiction. Well, the CIA still insists on the right of review and redaction.
Right. Even though we're
And that is because you have an agreement with the CIA that you signed in order to be a spook.
Right. But if he's using completely fictional incidents that may be parallel or somewhere similar to events that actually...
Well, the CIA wants to make sure that you're not even inadvertently giving up anything that might be classified material. Now, when you apply that to the President of the United States, remember, Charles J. Harder says that he's writing as a representative of Trump for President, Inc., okay?
Right.
To what extent does the campaign merge with the presidency? If they merge, then he just represents Trump.
But the problem here is the product that they're going to try to attempt to have prosecuted for disparagement is all work product after he became president. So how can a corporate entity apply to that? An individual outside non-governmental corporate entity apply to that in the suit. I don't understand how that's possible.
Well, it's all got to get past summary judgment first.
Right. I don't think it's going to pass summary judgment.
I think it's an open question as to whether or not anything gets filed.
Oh, because the fact that Trump did this 20 times and only attempted to prosecute two, so I think it's going to be numbered 19.
It, right.
Okay. I agree.
Charles J. Harder has proven by virtue of the fact that he represented Harvey Weinstein and Hulk Hogan that he'll do anything for money. Okay.
He's a dick. He's a total dick.
Well,
yeah.
He'll do anything for money. And so if Trump says, I definitely want you to write a really mean letter and tell them that I'll sue them. They're like, yeah, okay, that'll be 10 at, okay, I could. That's a $20,000 letter there, Mr. President. I don't care. I've got I'm good for it. I can pay you next week, okay?
Yeah, but hasn't there been some hoopla lately about him doing a lot of legal defense work with lawyers on his behalf and charging the government for it? Has that been a...
Look, some of this shit is going to be a decade unraveling.
Right. But he's not supposed to use government funds for his defense in these matters.
But what happens is the lawyer takes their money, or takes his money and writes the $10,000 or $20,000 letter. Right. And then he says, okay, now we've got to sue him. And that's when the lawyer sits down and says, look, Don, okay, I know you're not big into details or anything, but we can't really sue these guys.
We don't
have a, Don, you were tough with them and you scared them and they'll never do it again. So I don't really want to flush my entire career down the toilet because I've already got that Harvey Weinstein thing in my background. So no, we're not going to sue anybody there, Don. You've already done your work here. You've showed them who's boss, Don. Now go lock yourself in your bedroom and worry about your toothbrush some more. I mean, God Almighty, Rich, there was a time when we thought that the tales of Nixon wandering around the White House drunk half out of his mind and talking to the portraits, we thought that was bad. Now we've got a guy who doesn't even fucking drink, who's locking himself in the bedroom and wondering if there's cyanide on the toothbrush.
And only Ivanka can come in.
Right. I don't know, Ivanka. I don't know if I can let you in now that you've made fun of my hair. What's left of it? I mean, I don't know. Ivanka, have you poisoned the hairspray? I mean, in a way, if he was not such an entirely disgusting, revolting, horrible, terrible exemplar of an attempt at membership in the human race, you would feel bad for him. Because there are lots of people inside this community who have watched people whom they love dearly descend into dementia. And it is nothing if not absolute heartbreak to bear witness to.
And yet the Republicans still won't ask him to resign.
No, because, you know, because they're getting what they want. But here's the saddest part of it. You know that scene in the Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, or the Fall of the Third Reich, where after Hitler offs himself, the first thing they do is they all light cigarettes?
Yeah.
Because Hitler hated smoking.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know who won't be sad if Donald Trump goes to his long home?
Melanoma?
Well, okay. If melanoma will be nervous.
Oh, okay.
But Ivanka and Don Jr.
They're gonna be heartbroken,
and Eric. Right? Eric, who is convinced that Ellen DeGeneres is part of the deep state.
Oh, boy. That's severely deranged.
Woo! They're going to be thrilled because they think they're going to inherit it all. It'll all be theirs. And then they'll go to the will reading, and they'll find out there's nothing to own.
Yeah, right. Okay. How do you know that billionaire doesn't have any money? It'll all go back to Putin, right? Whatever assets are,
it's all debt. I mean, one of the other revelations is that, you know, one of the reasons he likes to eat from KFC and McDonald's is because he knows the food has already been prepared and no one knew it was for him.
Right.
So, therefore, it can't be poisoned.
That's right.
But just hold on for a minute, Rich. What kind of miserable shitheel have you been in your life, not you, that you're sitting around wondering if people are trying to bump you off by poisoning your food? This is 21st century America. This isn't Renaissance Florence. These aren't the fucking Borgias, okay?
But isn't that one of the symptoms of power? Paranoid schizophrenia? To think that somebody's trying to poison you?
Yes. And of course, apparently this book contains numerous references to the fact that this man is eaten up with paranoia. And here's a little bit of what some other radio hosts call homework. I'm going to do it myself. It may take a little while. But go and see go and see if you can find out any information about the last days of Randolph Churchill.
Who's Randolph Churchill?
Randolph Churchill was the father of Winston Churchill.
Okay.
Randolph Churchill died of tertiary neurosyphilis.
Oh my God.
And he was batty. He was battier than a church belfry by the time he went. Now, Churchill wrote a biography of him, trying to pretend that he was some sort of great man, because right. Churchill was hungry for the affection of his father, which he never really got. But if you can find any sort of objective reporting on the end of Randolph Churchill, you'll find a raving paranoiac. You'll find a man reduced to dribbling madness by syphilis. And yes, this is pre-penicillin. I understand that. But you know what? You have to go get the penicillin for the penicillin to work on syphilis.
Wikipedia says that he died of a heart attack in his sleep.
Yeah, he did. And he was eaten alive by tertiary syphilis.
It doesn't say anything about that, though.
Yeah, it was. It's true.
I believe you, because Wikipedia is not the most reliable source. I'm looking at it right now, and that's all it says. He died of a heart attack in his sleep, was found by one of his researchers the next morning. On June 1968, at his home, Storehouse, East Berghoff, Suffolk. He was 57.
No. That's a different one. They repeated names.
Oh, that is? Oh, okay. No, this is... this is the one, the father of Winston. Yeah, this is him. But that's all it says. I looked up and I went back to the top of the page and
said, Lord Randolph Churchill.
Lord Randolph Churchill. You mean there's a Lord Randolph Churchill, and then that was his father, and then another Randolph Churchill?
Yeah, he named his son Randolph, Winnie did.
Oh, this one was the son. Okay, this is the son. Okay. All right. I stand corrected. This one is the son, not the father. You're talking about the father.
I'm talking about Churchill's father.
Yeah, okay, all right. Well, it's not on Wikipedia, at least my first inquiry. So.
Yeah, died January 24th, 1895, at the age of 45.
Oh, okay. Well, it doesn't look like they had a history of longevity in his family, because his son died at 57.
Well, and here's the other thing, though. And you don't this takes the syphilis part out of it. But Trump's father died with dementia, Alzheimer's, and that's a genetic relationship in the first degree. So you got to be, you can't ignore something like that.
No, you can't.
I mean, it's not a guarantee or anything, but.
Well, I don't understand. You know, it bothers my mind, Bob, that the most powerful man on the planet did not have to have any kind of psychiatric examination before he took the oath of office. I mean, we should make that a mandatory thing from now on. That everybody's got to pass a psychiatric examination.
And there's been legislation enrolled in the House to that effect.
But it probably goes nowhere.
Well, it goes nowhere right now. But the problem is that we tend to look at our, and problems are problems of the moment.
Right.
For instance, it's like what I was talking about the other night. Where is the amendment to the Constitution in either house of the Congress that would eliminate the Electoral College? The short answer is it isn't there.
Right.
As Sparky pointed out, there's a petition at change.org, yada, yada. But the legislation that would actually repeal the Electoral College and make the president be elected by a popular vote isn't there.
And, of course, it's not there because the Republicans would never allow it. It would have to become a constitutional amendment.
Well, it has to be a constitutional amendment any way you slice it.
Right, but
and those things are slow to get through. So, with every day's delay, it becomes later and later to accomplish.
Right, and the red states, as presently constituted, their senators would never allow it because they'd never be in power. They'd never have the presidency again. They would probably never have a majority in either House of Congress either, ever again. They'd always be a minority party. Why would they allow that?
Well,
I mean, as long as it takes two-thirds of the Senate to do it after you have the required number of required number of states, you know, signing onto the amendment, it would never. How's it ever going to happen?
Good question.
Do you think it could ever happen?
At this point in time, I don't say never to anything in this country anymore.
Okay, all right. You're more of an optimist than I am. That's for sure. I'm not very optimistic.
Well,
about
there's only one way to get rid of the Electoral College.
Yeah, by constitutional amendment.
Yeah.
But people
are trying. You know, legislators are trying a workaround by coming up with these compacts. But given the nature of our Supreme Court, that might not work either. The Supreme Court could strike it down.
Okay, can you see a path to that happening?
The compact thing, yeah, it could happen. I mean, they're pursuing it because it's easier to have that happen than it is to amend the Constitution. But sooner or later, that nasty old relic of slavery has got to freaking go.
Right. The compact. All right, do you see a path to that happening?
There's a path, but like everything else in government, it has to be powered by political will.
And you think that 34% of Trump sycophants stands in the way of that?
Right now they do. I mean, right now what stands in the way of getting anything meaningful done in the Congress is the presence of Republican majorities in both houses. I mean, that much of the analysis is simple.
Right. Right. Well, do you see at least the House turning over to Democrats next year?
It'll be harder to turn the House than it will be to turn the Senate.
So it was just the opposite. I mean, we had to defend, the Democrats got to defend a lot more seats than the Republicans have to defeat.
I understand that.
Year.
I understand that. But Senate seats aren't gerrymandered.
That's true. That's right. Popular vote. You're right. So do you see enough of a groundswell against Trump in 2018?
I hope so. But look what he was tweeting about lately. The Dow Jones just crossed 25,000 for the first time in history, and it got there really, really fast, believe me, very fast. And the economy's booming, and coal is great again. And if that shit sells among the rubes,
it does.
November,
it does sell among the rubes.
No, November could be a difficult place.
It's still pretty much at the place where he famously said, "I could stand on the middle out in the middle of Broadway and kill somebody."
Look, the dumb bastard's still president, and he's out there threatening nuclear war.
Right, and
even Harry Truman didn't threaten nuclear war.
But he just dropped
the goddamn bomb.
But these bastards want the apocalypse.
Some of them do. Some of them think it'll make Jesus come down in his holy rolls.
It isn't some; it's a lot. I mean, the evangelicals are like what? There got to be at least a half or two-thirds of his sycophant following.
And so we come back to what we were saying previously. It depends on the degree to which the Republicans in the Congress think that they can get along without him or think that they can get reelected without his base.
Well,
because that, you know, that base isn't in New York.
No,
if you're Peter King out on Long Island,
yeah, you're out on Long Island for sure.
You've got to win. The Trumpansies are not going to put you over the top. But if you're Mo Brooks, Les Brains, down in Alabama's 5th Congressional District,
yeah,
you're not going to piss off the Trumpansies. My three Republican weirdo, well, my two Republican weirdos here, they're not going to piss off the Trumpansies because this is the Trumpiest place on earth. Still,
are they evangelicals?
Still.
Are your two evangelicals? Are you talking about your congressman? Or
yeah,
your
two out of my three members of Congress are running for re-election, and they're not going to piss off the maggots. Because
are they evangelicals?
Not so much. You can barely get Looney Mooney to come to West Virginia. He lives across the river in Maryland.
Oh, okay.
Or prefers to be across the river in Maryland. He carpet-bagged his ass across the Potomac to run for Congress here.
Right, right.
And he's scarcely heard from. McKinley up in Morgantown rode in on a Friends of Coal Obama war on the EPA, or Obama EPA war on coal wave. It's not so much the religious maniacs as the straight-up Trumpansies, okay? I live in, at least one metric, the most racist state in the union, okay?
I could believe that, yeah.
And consequently, the Democratic Party here is in complete disarray because it's been turned into a cult of personality for Joe Manchin.
Right.
And so, as a result, Democrats don't know what it means to be a Democrat. There are a handful of progressives here and there, and the smart ones have a fighting chance of getting elected. The idiots, on the other hand, don't have a chance, that is. Hey, Rich, it has been a great conversation. I really appreciate it, but the phone's been ringing all along since you've been on, and you've got folks fired up.
I will get you check in with you in a couple of weeks. So good to talk to you, Bob.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Rich.
Be well.
You stay warm, okay?
I will, and you too.
All right,
take care.
Have
a good night, Bob.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye now. And that's our buddy Rich calling. Calling from New Jersey. And see, while all of this is going on, there are real things happening in this country. In 2018, in Baltimore, they seem to be having trouble keeping their classrooms warm enough for children to go to school. Because, well, the school systems are falling apart, and the Republican governor of Maryland is saying it's not school lack of funding that keeps the school conditions in such terrible shape. He's blaming, guess what, school teachers. Right. And you know what? If your children can't get educated, they're not going to be much in the way of, they're not going to be very good at governing themselves now, are they? Meanwhile, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III today declared that he was going to go to war against the marijuanas. This should come as no surprise to anybody who listens to this program, because I have told you for years all about how when he was a U.S. attorney, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III was heard to remark, I used to think the Klan was cool till I found out they smoked the marijuana. Sessions apparently watched Reefer Madness and took it as gospel. And so enjoy your legal weed until the stormtroopers show up at your doors, California and Massachusetts and Colorado. Cory Gardner is a Republican senator from Colorado, and he's downright pissed and has said that Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III actually lied to him in the confirmation process, because, of course, Cory Gardner of Colorado eagerly voted for Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III back when it was a good thing to be supporting anything that that the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini wanted. If Dolt 45 said he wanted Sessions to be Attorney General, Cory Gardner was going to be right there. Now he's not, because he's a Republican, Cory Gardner. And all that money flowing into the state of Colorado from the sale of legal weed, hey, well, that feels pretty damn good. Yes, sirree, it does. And for all I know, Cory Gardner likes to go home at night and put his feet up and stick them in the stirrups of his electric aquarium pump powered bong and do a few blasts. Meanwhile, Silent R. Lamar is not happy with the Republican governor of Maryland, saying, "I'm a fucking teacher. Ask him to dip into his fucking pocket for his damn child. I'm done." I understand, Silent R. Lamar. I do. Let's run down to where, well, no, it's not going to be any warmer there either, but let's check in down in South Carolina stand with our buddy Todd. Hey, Todd.
What's up, man? It's cold here.
Cold here, man. Cold here. Did you get any snow?
We didn't get snow, but right as you get further to the coast, I-95 corridor was terrible last night. terrible last night. And it, trucks crashing, you know, just like about
100 miles. People cannot drive on that stuff.
No.
And some of that wasn't snow. Some of it was ice. And I don't care who you are, you can't drive on ice.
Right. Yeah, you know, you get the people with the four wheels and they think, well, I can do anything now. I have this expensive truck. And it doesn't work like that, you know.
No.
Yeah, it's terrible.
No, if you want to go anywhere in that stuff and you've got an expensive truck and everything, that's why they give you four-wheel low lock. That's why you lock the hubs and put it in four-wheel low and put it in about second gear. And if you want to go somewhere, you're going to go there at 20 miles an hour, tops. But you're going.
Slow and steady.
Yeah, go any faster, and the only place you're going is into the median, into the ditch, or into the side of the hill.
You know, I've run off the road before in the ice, and once you do that once, you don't forget it, number one. Number two, you have more respect. But, you know, for some reason, people tailgate here a lot. I mean, I'm not making this up, but the insurance ratings come out every year about the safest and the worst states to drive in. And we were second to worst. I think Louisiana was the worst this year or last year, 17. And we were second worst. And I'm totally not surprised at all. You know, but it, you know, what are you going to do? You can't teach people how to drive. What can you do? And it was colder here last night than it was in Philly, man, in Jersey.
Yeah.
And this is weird. But hey, I want to ask you something about your acorn.
Yeah.
I know it's insulated, I guess, because it's like the egg where it's got the, you know, the, I don't know what that is, pumice or stone, whatever the stuff is.
The egg is ceramic. This thing is some sort of man-made insulation stuff, but it held heat, and I mean it held temperature like a gem.
That's what I was curious about. Were you able to put your hands on the shell, like to keep your hands warm when you were out there?
No, the outside just couldn't. The outside didn't get too particularly warm.
Wow.
I mean, if you put it, I had a nice 215, 220 degree fire going inside, and I could pretty much put my hands on the outside of the top never got warm. The bottom, you could feel a little bit of heat coming through, but there was, it was all on the inside.
Wow. Yeah. That, I'm looking forward to that. I'm saving up. I'm doing what I have to do now. But
between me and Brother Deacon Asa, we're having fun experimenting with them.
Yeah, and you have all the accoutrements. You got the thing that holds the drip pot, don't you?
No, all I've got is the smoking stone. You can't do without, because basically that's an infrared heat deflector. That keeps that keeps direct heat from getting to the meat, and so being ceramic, it soaks up the heat, and it provides a constant layer of heat, and it burns off and cleans up real easy. The damn thing's a joy to clean. Once you're done cooking and you pull it off, pull whatever it is off of it, you shut the lid again. You open up the dampers on the top and the bottom. You let the fire go up to about 600 degrees, and then you just come back through when it cools down, and just everything's a nice little ash, and you scrape it off and you re-oil your grate, and you're good to go.
That's it.
You're done. So I've got a pizza stone and the smoking stone, and I've got a rib rack.
Oh yeah, the rib rack. Yeah. Well, that's beautiful. That is beautiful. As soon as it gets a little bit warmer, I'm getting back out there because the leaves are gone. I've got a nice stockpile of wood, so I'm looking forward to that. And we'll see what happens with my eagles.
I'm playing little fantasy games in my mind here. Ever since I found out that Netroots Nation was going to be in New Orleans at the beginning of August of this year. I've been toying with the idea that maybe we'd try to see if people wanted to come. You may or may not be interested in Netroots Nation. It depends. It's kind of been what I'm getting at.
But it's
an election year, and there'll probably be some candidates down there and whatnot. But it'd be real cool if we could find like a state park somewhere nearby. Maybe go out spring for an acorn. They're not that expensive. And do a big horn in barbecue one afternoon.
Wouldn't that be great?
Absolutely. Of course, it'd probably rain on us. We're talking about early August in New Orleans, but why not?
So what? Get a place. They have pavilions in the state down here, well, at least. Yeah, they have like pavilion areas with the benches set up. So when it's the southeast, it rains.
Just get a brand new one out of the box, set it up, burn it in. And go to the grocery store, get some barbecue, some brisket, whatever, and throw, because I'm sure there wouldn't be a whole bunch of us, and just have a big old badass barbecue and drink some Jack's or some Dixie brand beer or whatever, and have a horn in. I sit around thinking about these things, especially in the dead of winter.
Yeah, that sounds beautiful. Are you kidding? Because Netroots, and things like that. I've only been listening to them for two or three years, but I like their the articles, because these are people who are really doing the reporting.
Well, originally it split off from Daily Kos as a Daily Kos convention, and then it became its own animal. I was actually the first. The Horn was the first organization to stream live content from Netroots Nation.
Get out of here!
Yeah, and then they went, "Hey, that might not be a bad idea."
God. Well, you're the granddaddy. I don't mean that in a bad way. You get people. You get people thinking. I'm hearing a lot of new callers, man. I'm hearing new people calling. I think there's some new interest. I think this is great. Obviously you're touching a lot of people, and what you're doing is you're educating people. You're just doing a great job. And people don't understand. We're talking about this acorn. It's shaped like an egg, and it's highly efficient, and you put chunks of oak or
right, and where the big green egg is a $2,000 affair, this one is $275.
Yeah, well, hell, the one I, you know, the egg I used, I didn't buy this at the clubhouse, you know, with my college friends out not far from here, out in the country, and you know that's what we do once a year. But yeah, it's just amazing because they will burn if you keep the wood in. It will just burn. It will burn.
Oh, and when I pulled this thing off and then I opened up the dampers to clean it, there was plenty of fuel left for it. If you want to just shut it all the way down and then clean the grate the hard way, you've probably got enough. You've got enough fuel in there for another fire.
Mm-hmm. They're amazing.
You load that sucker up and it'll hold that 200, 250 degrees for 12, 14, 16 hours. And you never touch it.
Never touch it.
Yeah.
So I'm not easily frightened, but
that's a fucker of a segue. Go ahead. Because I got a feeling this ain't going to be about barbecue.
No, I had to start with the good news. You know.
You and Rich.
Rich. You know, I've been in his neck of the woods. The jockey sent me up there a lot, and he's near Newark. Because Elizabeth, my God, man, that's the job. We used to go to. I've been to that train station, like the light rail that runs the Petco, and New Jersey Transit. They got a rail. You could take it from Philly straight up to Jersey. You get off at Elizabeth. I was servicing schools there, and in Newark, and that's like a suburb of New York City. Really, that's nowhere from New York. I mean, nobody can afford to live in New York anymore unless you're making $1 million. You can't even get near it. So, you know, you got to live in Jersey or upstate, someplace like that.
Brooklyn, Queens.
Brooklyn's getting pricey, man. But I don't know, man. The places you can afford, you don't want to live there. Seriously, it is.
Wait. The places you can afford, you don't want to live there. Oddly enough, that is not limited to the greater New York metropolitan area. I can say the same thing about several places here within 10, 15 miles of me in West Virginia.
Really? It's not funny. It's really not, man. I think they're expecting folks to double up. I think that's the only thing the conclusion I can come to, because the way it's looking, we got to brush up on our Dickens. You know, and we need to remember what East London was like, you know, because this is looking ugly.
Well, it is. And I mean, I mentioned bad neighborhoods in West Virginia because I saw the news about Sessions today. And like I said, I wasn't surprised, but honest to little baby Jesus, this country is absolutely on fire with addictive drug problems, whether it be opioids, opiates, whether it be pills, whether it be smack, whether it be fentanyl or elephant fentanyl. You know, this country is being destroyed from the inside out by that shit. And the Attorney General of the United States of America gets up in the morning and goes, you know, we got to do something about this marijuana. When now that we have legal cannabis, there is beginning to actually be peer-reviewed research out there that shows that when you legalize weed, your opioid problem goes and falls apart.
It's disgusting, Bob, and I can almost guarantee that you're going to agree with me.
I mean, it's almost like that stupid little jug-eared fucker wants the opioid problem to be as bad as it is, or worse.
He's just an evil little man. He's a troll. You know what? And I have to get off on this one tangent, one real quick about Roy Moore, and then back to. First of all, gather ye trichomes while ye may. That's all I can say. And I don't think he. You know what? I think he just found out you can grow your personal use in D.C. I don't think he knew that. I think he just found that and just pissed him the hell off. Because you can grow in D.C. for your personal use. But anyway, and because he makes me think of Roy Moore, because it's like, how do these fucking reprobates get this type of standing? And then I thought about it, and I'm going to be real quick because I know you went on a lot of time here, but this shit pisses me off. Roy Moore, we shouldn't even had. And I remember what I told you. I was like, well, I don't know. It's just accusations. I meant that. We can't have a society where people are just snatched off the street for accusations. It doesn't work like that. Fuck that shit. However, it wasn't. Why did it take some white women saying that he touched them? It wasn't like he was a damn good person before that shit. He was a racist, a homophobe, xenophobe. Like almost any type of pathology you could think of, you know, that was him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, oh, wait, you touched a woman 40. Oh, and then, you know, now it's a fucking problem. Well, wait a minute.
Yeah, hold up.
You let him pass through gate through 1 through 8, you know, instead of frisking his ass. Now he's got a goddamn machine gunner and a flamethrower. And you're like, wait a minute, sir. Too late for that shit, motherfucker.
Wait a minute.
You shouldn't.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
I'm sorry. I got wound up. But that's the way I look at it. Why the fuck are we even talking about this asshole? He never should have been in the contention in the first place. And see, but that's a cultural thing. And, this is two components to this. Because remember, women around the world, women are not respected in most societies. Most societies, women are not respected. There's a lot of places around the world where a woman has a female baby and they'll drown it, they'll kill it. You know, it costs money to have a female. There's dowries, this and that. So that whole evangelical society is almost like what we see in what we call the primitive world, where, you know, they don't want no goddamn spinster sitting around in the house till they're fucking 35. And I've listened to these motherfuckers, and I was like, that's exactly what the fuck I was talking about. Yeah, I've heard the interview, and I was like, oh, my God. Because I know some of these people. It's like, no, well, that man's got a good job, and oh, he likes my daughter. Oh, God, I don't care. Ooh, but go ahead, talk to him, honey. Go ahead. Am I making this shit up?
No. No, you are not.
That's, right. See? That's what the fuck I'm talking about. And they respect. I mean, this is the goddamn truth. People are scared to say the fucking truth. That's the fucking truth. It's a different culture. And that's exactly why I'm concerned about Doug Jones. But I'm not going to get into that right now.
No, I understand culture. It. But speaking of Alabama, on the other hand, I just had a note from Clarence. And subject line, Roy Moore's faith or fantasy. Bob, I guess that God of Roy Moore's and his followers decided not to answer their prayers. Makes all that kneeling and hand clasping a wasted effort. Old Roy said God knew the truth. So I have to believe God's decision was based on the truth. Roy Moore and folks like him really need to stop the phony rhetoric. And I agree with Clarence, because I don't know if you're aware of it, but Roy Tolamore had a very bad day today.
Mm-mm.
Yes. He got sued today.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He got sued for defamation of character.
Okay.
He got sued for defamation of character by Lee Korfman, the woman that he denied groping.
Oh, Lee.
And okay. She sued him and his campaign organization.
Oh.
In the suit paper, she says, the baseless and irresponsible attacks that Moore perpetrated happened because she dared to speak up, and that she suffered emotional and economic harm as a result.
Well, good for her.
It has resulted, his actions have resulted in her being called, and this is a quote from the suit papers, a 14-year-old whore. You know, that was of course a Christian.
Oh my God.
That was a Christian calling her that.
Oh my God.
It resulted in her being accused of being a tool of George Soros, and that she was paid by George Soros to say untrue things about Roy Tola.
These people are out of control. They're out of control.
Well, you know, now Roy's going to get his day in court.
Mm.
And if he is stupid enough to do it, he can go all the way to trial with this without having to settle with that Jezebel.
No, but that would entail him having to say things under oath, wouldn't that not?
He's going to get himself all swore in. And it just keeps getting worse because, yesterday you said you weren't going to, but yesterday Doug Jones was sworn in as the first Democratic senator from Alabama in 30 years.
Right.
Well, there were esteemed guests and friends of long standing at the swearing-in ceremony, one of whom, because the goddess of irony never misses a lick, she does not sleep, one of whom was the Jew lawyer that Kayla Moore said proved that by hiring him that they didn't have, that they wasn't no anti-Semites.
That Jew, I remember that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that's so yeah, and
he was hired, by the way, he was hired to defend Caleb Moore, their God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian son, when, he got busted for drugs.
Mm-hmm.
That's when they hired their Jew lawyer. Well, we have a lawyer who's a Jew. How could we hate Jews? Of course, they're going to the.
Hey, you know he's good, because he's a Jew.
Of course, when they die, they're going to the same place anybody goes that doesn't believe in have a personal relationship with their Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
Bob, this shit made me cringe. You have no idea. You should have seen the face I made when I heard that. I was like, these people are so. They don't even know how racist they are. They have no. They wouldn't know a Jew if a Jew came up and hit him in the head with a bagel. They wouldn't fucking know.
It's the bagel that makes it art, Todd.
I mean, seriously, I've seen this shit. I'm like, well, I remember when. Anyway, I'm just saying. I'm just saying. They hate shit they don't even know anything about. It was because I grew up. I mean, come on, man. It's a different culture. It's like I said when I first moved down here. Well, the currency is the same. It's different. It's different. I'm not saying it's bad. Well, a lot of times it is bad. It's just. It is what it is. I don't know what to say. I mean, I didn't mean to cut you off, but this shit, I got the visual.
No, you didn't cut me off. No, man.
I mean, when I saw his wife doing that, and he was like, yeah, baby, you go out here and talk about that Jew lawyer, because everybody knows it, and that'll put us on the good side of them Yankees, because they love Jews, and they love them lawyers. You know, the good Jew, that's the best lawyer you can get, is a Jew lawyer. I
get emails about the fun voices that I do. You got me beat all to thunder there, brother.
Well, thanks, Bob. Any compliment coming from you? That's because you got a lot of experience under your belt. Now you have a lot of experience, but it made me feel really bad because when people, it's one thing to disparage someone on an individual basis. And I know, like, I've said things about people, and I know it'll come off as crude and crass.
No, I understand. But the way she said it, she makes it sound like there's there's a couple of classes there at the University of Alabama that, at the law school that you don't get to take unless, you're a member of the tribe. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Like, I got to feed into this Fox News stereotype because, the good lawyers, I mean, it's the truth. What the fuck? These people are out of control, man. It's like, oh, okay. So I don't even know what to say about this. These all these revelations coming out in this book. I mean, this is stuff that we already kind of knew, but it's just a little bit worse than we thought it was. If all this is true, which it probably is, because what the fuck is this shit with him behind the screen? I mean, what were you doing? What was the president doing in his busy-ass day that he works from fucking 11 to 5, and he's probably not fucking coherent? I don't know what the fuck. Wait a minute. Let's go to his eyes. Yeah. All right. Dementia and Alzheimer's are different. They're similar, but they're different.
This is true. This is true. Absolutely true.
Intermingled. And after I graduated, I worked in labs. I was like a researcher. I was a lab assistant. Research. I had human and animal subjects, and one of the projects I worked on was an Alzheimer's project, and it dealt with some dementia. You know, we would screen people out. You know, as rabbits, you didn't have to screen them because they're just rabbits. But there's a certain look. I mean, in a person's eye, and it that sounds subjective, but there's something. There's a called a puff test, and there's a puff of air that you sit somebody in a chair and you put their head.
I know about it. Yeah.
Okay. So, and it's an involuntary test, and then when you look at these folks, you're just like, whoa, there is a faraway look. He's got that faraway look in his eye. You know, and this is all. It's really looking like you're saying, you know, like a lot of you and a lot of other people have been saying for a long time, the spirochetes are eating away his brain. But the problem
I get that. Hold on. Okay, just a minute. You know, mm-hmm. I get the idea that sometimes people think, you know, old Bob's kidding about the spirochetes.
Oh, hell no. No. How long have we been saying this shit? A long time, man.
Now, I don't, and of course, this makes, I admit it, you know, when I do it, I admit it, I try not to do it, but if, I mean, it can't have but a little bit of an aspect of Alex Jones about it, because they'll, even if he is eaten alive by syphilis, they'll never admit it, okay?
No. Yeah, that's too embarrassing. That will never.
There's too much evidence. It would be mm-hmm. particularly, you know, when Lord Randolph Churchill got it, there was no penicillin, there was no cure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking about mm-hmm. an era when they treated syphilis with freaking mercury, okay?
Right.
Well,
yep.
If he.
Yeah.
And again, I go back to the circumstantial evidence. And the circumstantial evidence is him bragging time after time after time about his sexual exploits during the 1990s, which he referred to as his sexual Vietnam.
Right.
And...
Yep.
And during that time, he was apparently not... I mean, he was choosy in terms of the appearance of the women with whom he had sex. But, you know, for a guy who's described as a germaphobe, one gets the idea he wasn't particularly choosy from a, shall we say, microbiological standpoint.
Right, right.
Because
right.
One of the things that comes out of this book, Isaac put me onto this last night, and Jesus Christ, is it gross?
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna share it with you here in a minute. As soon as I get down to it in my feed.
Okay.
It has to do. It has to do with you know his sexual fixation,
mm-hmm.
and oh I'm sorry it was Sandra that sent it to me. It's a screen cap I guess from the book, and it reads as follows. Trump liked to say that one of the things that made life worth living was getting your friends' wives into bed. In pursuing a friend's wife, he would try to persuade the wife that her husband was perhaps not what she thought. Then he'd have his secretary ask the friend into his office. Once the friend arrived, Trump would engage in what was, for him, more or less constant sexual banter. Do you still like having sex with your wife? How often? You must have had a better fuck than your wife. Tell me about it. I have girls coming in from Los Angeles at 3:00. We can go upstairs and have a great time. I promise. All the while, Trump would have his friend's wife on the speakerphone, listening in.
Wow, what an asshole. Oh, he is a terrible human being. He, honest to God, another reprobate.
And so when you consider that kind of behavior, picking up an STD is not that unlikely. You know, maybe it's not syphilis, maybe it's gonorrhea, maybe it's not gonorrhea, maybe it's chlamydia.
Yeah.
Or the herpes.
And remember, we weren't using condoms. You know,
A guy like him, I mean, really, I mean, a manly man. And so, everybody says, well, you know, his kids were all before, with the exception of little Boron, all of his kids were born before then, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, look, I'll go ahead and say it. We live in a modern era. Who's to say that the little boy wasn't conceived? I mean, there's no proof that he and melanoma ever had sex.
Nope.
She has allegedly said that she married him for one reason and one reason only. And it wasn't how hot he was in bed. It was the money.
Yep.
Okay.
She married him for security. She married him for security. Because her name is already out there.
He obviously looks like Trump. That's not a problem. But who's to say that he's not the product of in vitro fertilization?
Well, and the fact that he, you know, he has a, you know,
what I'm getting at is that it is anything but impossible that he would have syphilis of an untreated nature that would have gone into tertiary neurosyphilis.
Exactly, because he's in his mind, he's Superman. So in other words, he doesn't need to go to the doctor. There's nothing wrong with him ever. And that's that.
Because by the way, Clarence pointing out something. I'm going to have to go watch the video again. Talking about irony, Clarence says, "Hey Bob, how about Doug Jones's gay son, eyeballing Mike Pence during the swearing in?"
Oh shoot!
You know, because
because
Pence is such a revolting, disgusting, anti-LGBT bigot. I'd seen references to it. Apparently, Doug Jones's son, if looks could kill, Mike Pencilneck Geek would have gone away in a basket.
Wow. I missed that. Like you said, I got to see that. And the other thing that was on my mind also, is that, you know, people are talking about, because, you know, a group of psychiatrists have marched in New York a few weeks, maybe a month ago. But, you know, people in the mental health field speaking out. But you see, the Goldwater rule does not apply to observable behaviors. I mean, it applies and it doesn't. In other words, there's a danger. When there's a danger, there's a danger. But there are some things that you can see. You don't need to have someone in your office if you're into that psychoanalysis stuff. Because nowadays, I mean, that's what MRIs are for. You know, that's the big branch of psychology. Like when I was in school, that was like, you had to decide, are you going to be a psychotherapist, which is passe, or are you going to go with the new science, See, and this is what I want to see. I want to see an MRI of his brain. Because then when you can see all these dark lesions that will be in his brain, which is, it's so obvious. I mean, I would be surprised.
And that's with any number of neurocognitive diseases, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. But and see, and as we all know, because most of us have been around our folks who have gone through something like this, and with some people it exacerbates like their terrible personality traits, and for other people they change and they're really nice. You never know, but he's always engaged in antisocial behavior before this. You know, before the dementia.
Right, and look, there's a social observation to be made there. If you are perceived to have sufficient wealth, there is a much broader spectrum of antisocial behavior in which you can engage than is available to you if you're poor.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's why poor people are crazy and rich people are eccentric.
Ta-da! Wait, you get another one.
Damn. Oh, shit. Okay. I've been
kind of free with the cowbells tonight, so.
We all love the cowbell, Bob. That was one of the best things you ever did. Yeah,
That's one of the best things Sparky ever did. He's the one sent it to me.
Sparky's great with that.
Because this isn't just any cowbell. This is an antique cowbell.
Holy shit.
I mean,
really?
This is seriously old.
Has it been on a Hereford?
I imagine it's been on something at some point in time.
Oh, do you know I have a stainless steel milking pail? Honest to God, I really do, a real one. It's like, it's the shit. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
No, that's okay.
Oh,
that's cool.
Man. So, yeah. So, I'm like, after this, I don't know. Like, you know, I watched Morning Joe this morning, and I was trying to listen to Washington Journal. But you see, I did both. But his following, they are, this component, this 30-whatever percent, I'd say 28% of that 30, they're this great white hope thing. He's like a messiah to them. It does not matter what that man does. I mean, when you listen to these regular...
That's the shooting people in the middle of Park Avenue aspect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And no matter what, I mean, these people call in and they're like, Donald Trump, they're still saying give him a chance. That motherfucker's been in office a year. Fucking shit up. Give him a chance to do what? He has put people incompetent in office who have no business being in the office they're in. People who are antithetical to the office they're in. Don't know shit. He doesn't know shit. And they don't know shit. And I say, you like to vote for Trump, you know, I say vote away, because coming up, you can vote for what facility he's going to be in. You can vote for what color bathrobe he's going to wear. You can vote for what kind of fucking bedroom slippers he's going to wear and what color his room should be. And vote away and leave us the fuck alone.
Shit. It's, but see, they're not willing to do that, Todd. They're not going to be happy unless we are doing their bidding. And the problem is, we've got a bunch of stupid people who want to tell people with functioning functioning brains. Look, it's idiocracy. It is another movie reference. Mm-hmm. I know, but mm-hmm. you remember how frustrating it was for Joe. When he started moving around among the idiots.
What, this morning?
No, not Scarborough. In Idiocracy, not sure.
Oh,
you know, it becomes not sure.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they could barely even understand each other.
Right.
You know, brought to you by Carl Jr.
Like,
why do you keep saying
language?
That? Because they pay me every time I do.
Right. It's like, well, I can't break through to you. Well, he didn't say that, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, what we've learned in the last year or two is that something approaching a full third of the United States of America is absolutely incapable of self-government. And that, at the end of this program tonight, is the terrifying conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Fully one-third of our fellow citizens are incapable of engaging in self-government. They need an autocrat. They need a tyrant. They need a dictator. Because left to their own devices, they'll fuck everything up. I mean, these stupid bastards still want a wall. No matter how much empirical data there is, that a wall will not solve any problem that they think will solve. There's a third of this country that thinks it sure would be kind of cool to see that mushroom cloud over that North Korea. Utterly oblivious that if there's a mushroom cloud over North Korea, there's going to be a mushroom cloud over us. It's like
they
the
don't
goddamn,
get it.
It's like the goddamn fools who supported George W. Bush's Iraq War. They had no idea that there were going to be fucking bodies coming back in boxes. And then when they started coming back, well, you know, we'd be winning now if it wasn't for the liberals.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
it's kind of a bitch to. Oh, sorry, bad word. It's kind of a downer to constantly be reminded of what a perilously thin razor's edge this entire country is perched upon.
Bob, we're in a train wreck right now. We may not know it.
Yeah.
I know you got to go, but Ron and Riley, I saw Free, and you too. I saw Freeline in July when I went back home in Durham. You know, he's got ALS.
Oh, yeah.
But he was. I mean, he looked so good. Oh my God, he has a nice band. You know, but he really looked good. But it's just a shame. But his firm, he bought out this whole building and he gutted it and to building a new hospital. So he's going to be working right to the, you know, till he can't work anymore. I'll put it like that.
Wow. Well, it's been a great conversation. It's been a while since we've talked, and I'm glad we did talk. Stay warm. That's all I can tell you. And I'll be, I'll be back here for Friday on the front porch tomorrow.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, you take care, Todd. Later.
You too, man. All right.
And thus we come to the end of the program. And a little bit more than the end of the program. Looks like we're going to have a fundraising goal of $535 tomorrow. It's going to be tough. But that's where it's going to be. 5:35. This evening was a goose egg. But thank you, just the same, for sharing your precious finite time engaged in the program. Thank you very much. And thanks to everybody who does keep this program going. And thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Keep getting well, Steve from Georgia Stan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks, John, for helping me get the website sorted out. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.